ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। The reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 33rd chapter, and we will read text 37. I understood yesterday that this was the text, and then I found out 10 minutes ago that it was read yesterday, but I think it's such an important text that we can read it again, because this is the one I meditated on a little bit, and this is the conclusion of the one of the most important points that is mentioned here in the 10th canto, one of the answer to one of the most confusing points in people trying to understand Krishna, especially when, as the saying in English goes, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous, you know, which is the case of most people in relation to Krishna. So I just quickly this morning went over some of the past verses from the time when I was here and had the privilege to address all of you, which was verse number 25, where it concluded the Rasa Dance. Then Pariksha Maharaj, in three verses, makes a very poignant question, a very, very important question to Krishna, about Krishna. Pariksha Maharaj asks Shukadeva Goswami, how can the preserver of all religious principles, the emblem and the perfection of all vows, the one who spoke the very essence of religion, act in an irreligious way? This is the, and this question, of course, it's these questions, which were, you know, verses 25, 26, which essentially in those questions, he was asking, how can someone like Krishna, who, although he may be independent because he's supreme, will he actually get reactions for this? And just like there's one verse which we were reading the other day in San Antonio about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these two verses from the 11th canto, 11:5, 33, and 34, very famous verses which Srila Prabhupada quotes many times, especially in the second canto of Bhagavatam, speaking about Lord Chaitanya. And in those verses it says, Dharmishta Arya Vachasa, that Lord Chaitanya was cursed by a Brahmin. No, there was a Brahmin who cursed Lord Chaitanya, and apparently he suffered the curse, because the curse was, this Brahmin was not allowed to go in the kirtans when Lord Chaitanya was having kirtan in the house of Shivas. And of course, no one was allowed to go in there except for his unalloyed devotees. So this particular Brahmin, thinking himself very qualified, and also being very inclined to curse people. You know, some Brahmins were like that, like Durvasa Muni. Everybody was afraid of Durvasa Muni and Vishwamitra Muni. They were especially famous for, if they got a little angry, you would certainly be cursed. Of course, the curse of a Brahmin was generally, although sometimes out of anger, was generally with the purpose of purification. No. Otherwise, someone has acted irreligiously, so they get cursed. You know, just like Dasharath, King Dasharath was cursed because he shot a Brahmin thinking he was a deer. Parents of the Brahmin cursed him. But it was a justifiable curse because he he was careless. No, wasn't careful in seeing that this was who he was shooting at. Even nowadays in Texas, they have hunting accidents. No, so what to speak of thousands of years ago, millions of years ago. So this Brahmin, he couldn't get in, so he took out his Brahmin thread and he cursed Lord Chaitanya with the strongest curse. The strongest curse means you break the thread. If you break the thread, that means it's a very heavy curse. If you just curse someone, you know, but if you take your thread and you break it, it's considered very serious. So his curse was that you will never enjoy material happiness. And of course, Lord Chaitanya took that as a blessing. I will never enjoy material. Well, this is a blessing. But the point is that sometimes people think Krishna was cursed in different ways throughout his lifetime. And so it appears that sometimes he suffered the reaction of that curse. Just like in the case and when he was in Dwarka and he was being actually cursed in so many ways by, what's his name? Shishupal, being cursed in so many ways. This was actually the result of the petition. It appeared that Krishna was being cursed and was taking those curses on his head, but the whole thing was a result of Shishupal's mother asking Krishna, you know, to be merciful to her son. He said, "Yeah, I can tolerate 100 curses, 100 offenses," and he did. And then after that, finished him off. So it was actually Krishna's promise to a chaste lady. It wasn't that he was being, but it appeared that way. And many times it appeared that Krishna was suffering some kind of reaction. So this was Pariksit Maharaj. He wanted to show that the Supreme Lord is never subject to any reaction. And he also wanted to know that another part of his questions was, if he's Atmarama, then why does he need to do this? You know, why does he need to do this? And this is something that was answered in a previous verse. Why does he need to dance with the gopis? He's self-satisfied. He can just exist and be happy. Why does he need to dance in such a way that creates so many questions in the minds of people? And then in his third verse, he reveals why he's asking these questions. Because he says, we want to know, meaning that Pariksit Maharaj, hopefully all of us, we accept Krishna's pastimes with the gopis as the perfection, the summum bonum of his loving propensity. But most of the persons present when Pariksit Maharaj was questioning Shukadeva Goswami were not devotees. No. They were karmis, jnanis, yogis, and there were some devotees there. But most of them were not devotees. Some were demigods. So, you know, we even see that Indra, even Brahma, cannot understand the pastimes of Krishna. So these are the questions. And then in 6 to 7 verses, different acharyas have different opinions, the answers came. So I just want to very briefly go over those answers. The first, of course, the first answer given by Shukadeva Goswami, don't imitate. Don't try to imitate a great personality. Great personalities, even some demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, can do things. The examples given, Lord Brahma was attracted to his daughter. No. But this was actually a pastime. It was even though he accepted another mental body, it was actually a pastime to show the power of the illusory energy. Brahma was actually subjected to this. It was not something out of his own desire, but he was subjected to this. Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison. So Shukadeva Goswami makes the point, he drank an ocean of poison. If we even drank one drop of that poison, we would be dead. But he drank it and he became more beautiful. No. Otherwise, he prospered. He had this beautiful blue mark on his neck, and he lakanta. No. And he's known as that. His neck became so beautiful. So basically he's saying, don't try to imitate these great demigods. And what to speak of the Lord of those demigods. Don't try to imitate any, and don't even try to imitate great devotees. No. It's stated that no one can understand the activities of a great devotee. No. So this was his initial answer. And then he goes on to deepen himself. He says in verse 31 that he's explaining that the Lord is personal. The Lord does this because he's personal. The universe is not operating according to impersonal energies or laws, as the Buddhists would have us believe, you know, especially there, or even the Mayavadis. And it's all energy. No. The Buddhists think it's an energy that has no spiritual manifestation. That actually a spirit itself is just a creation of matter. And the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, yes, there is spirit, but spirit is ultimately an energy. So to defeat that, Shukadeva Goswami said that this is the Lord's desire. This is his activity. This is his desire. And then the example, so he's saying that these things are very intricate, and it's a very difficult thing to understand the instructions of the Supreme Lord. And the example given by Jiva Goswami is Ashwatthama, the trial of Ashwatthama. Krishna said, kill him. No? Krishna gave Arjuna a direct instruction to kill him. Bhima said, kill him. But Draupadi said, don't kill him. No? So Arjuna, by considering all of Krishna's past statements and considering the logic given in each statement, he found a way to kill him and not kill him. So sometimes it may appear, otherwise the whole point is, sometimes it may appear by one set of instructions that something should be done. But a devotee is very careful to take into account all instructions. Just like sometimes in ISKCON, we have back and forth arguments on an issue. The guru issue, the woman issue, this issue and that issue. And there'll be very strong opposing side, because sometimes we have a tendency to take a few statements of Srila Prabhupada, find other statements to support what we want, and then, especially with the with internet, with Vedabase. You know. Before there was Vedabase, that wasn't so common, because you actually had to read through everything and memorize it. Mm-hmm. Now you can just look up something, and then you find a few key words, and you find some supporting verses, and you send out a whole argument. But you have to take everything into consideration. So this was Shukadeva Goswami saying, yes, you're saying something on one level, but there are other levels. And now I will explain those levels. And then he goes to verse 32 and 33. He says, ultimately, the Supreme Lord is free from karma. No, there's no such thing. Even for great devotees, which he says in verse number 34, they're not even subject to karma. Great devotees, great yogis, great sages are not subjected to karma. No. They are actually, so what to speak of the Lord of those persons? And then he goes into a very deep verse. The last three verses, or the last two verses leading up to the verse, today's verse, are very deep verses. The first one of those two says that that the I'm sorry, 35 says that he who is witnessing the activities within the heart of these wives, how can he be sinful? So we'll start from there. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Nasuyan Kalu, Krishnaya, Mohitas, Tasya, Mayaya, Manyamana, Swa, Parshva, Stan, Swan, Swan, Daran, Rajaukasha, Nasuyam Kalu Krishnaya, Mohitastasya Mayaya, Manyamana Swaparshvastan, Swan Swandaram Vachaukasa, Nasuyan Kalu Krishnaya, Mohitastasya Mayaya, Manyamana Saparshvastan, Swan Swandaran Vachaukasa. Nasuyan Kalu Krishnaya, Mayaya, Manyamana Saparshvastan, Rajaushaka. Nasuyan Kalu Krishnaya, Mohitastasya Mayaya, Manyamana Saparshvastan, Swan Swandaran Vajaukasa. Nasuyan Kalu Krishnaya, Mohitastasya Mayaya, Nyamana Saparshvastan, Swan Swandaran Bajaukasa. Vaishnavis, Nasuyan Kalu Krishnaya, Mohitastasya Mayaya, Manyamana Saparshvastan, Swan Swandaran Bajaukasa. Na Asuyan. We're not jealous. Kalu. Even. Krishnaya. Against Krishna. Mohita. Bewildered, tasya, his, mayaya, by the spiritual potency of illusion, manyamana, thinking, swaparshva, at their own sides, stan, standing, swan, swan, each their own, Dharan, wives, Braja Okasa, the cowherd men of Braja. Translation and purport by the servants of Srila Prabhupada. The cowherd men, bewildered by Krishna's illusory potency, thought their wives had remained home at their sides. Thus, they did not harbor any jealous feelings against him. Please repeat. The cowherd men, bewildered by Krishna's illusory potency, thought their wives had remained home at their sides. Thus they did not harbor any jealous feelings against him. Purport. Because the gopis loved Krishna exclusively, Yoga Maya protected their relationship with Krishna at all times, even though they were married. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes from the Ujjvala Nilamani as follows. Maya kalpita tadrik stri shilane na nanus suyubi na jatu brajadevi nam patibi sahasangama. The gopis' jealous husbands consorted not with their wives, but with doubles manufactured by Maya. Thus, these men never actually had any intimate contact with the divine ladies of Braja. The gopis are the internal energy of the Lord and can never belong to any other living being. Krishna arranged their apparent marriage to other men simply to create the excitement of parakiya rasa, the love between a married woman and her paramour. These activities are absolutely pure because they are the Lord's pastimes, and saintly persons since time immemorial had relished these supreme spiritual events. So, just before I get into this verse specifically, I wanted to go to verse 35, just to, again, because this is where this particular aspect of understanding the verse that we're dealing with comes in, begins the analysis. He who lives as the overseeing witness within the gopis and their husbands, and indeed within all embodied living beings, assumes forms in this world to enjoy transcendental pastimes. So, what does that mean? First of all, that Krishna, everything that Krishna does is lila. No. When the demigods were praying for the advent of Lord Chaitanya, when he was in the womb of Sachi Devi, they mentioned all these different pastimes of the Lord. And they mentioned them in the sense of from the Lord's point of view, not from our point of view. From our point of view, Krishna is coming as an avatar to save us in different forms. But from Krishna's point of view, he wanted to play in the water, so he came as Matsya. You know? He had an itch on his back, so he took the form of Kurma. You know? He wanted to observe the bickering between the demigods, so he took the form of Jagya and sat on top of Mandala Mountain. And each incarnation, he wanted to enjoy the pastimes he wanted to protect his devotee Prahlad Maharaj. And then he felt like, it's so wonderful, Prahlad is feeling so much bliss having me as his, you know, he's having me as in a fatherly role, but yet my father is a pillar, you know. So I want to have a father. So then he came as Lord. Then he had a father in the form of Kasyapa Muni. But there was no relationship. No, there was no relationship. Even with his mother, he just instructed her and then left. No, there was no rasa there. So now I want to have a father with rasa. So then he took the form of Ramachandra. But then he was separated from his father. His father left. So now let me have a relationship with father, mother, and everybody, you know, in the most intimate way. And he took this form of Krishna, which is the most personal, the most the form of Krishna. But each one of them was a lila. You know, this is all his lila. This is from Krishna's point of view. He doesn't want to, you know, there are many different points of view of why Krishna does something. But from Krishna's point of view, it's always pleasure. It's never, even killing demons is pleasure because they're benefited. Krishna's benefiting them. Krishna's blessing them. How can you bless a demon? No. Krishna kills them. That's how he blesses them. Right? It's very difficult to bless a demon by other means. If you give them good instruction, they become envious. You know? If you try to do anything with them, then they always have a negative adverse reaction. So Krishna kills them, and they're promoted at the minimum to Brahman. And some demons, when they become very fortunate, just like Putana, who was singled out by Uddhava to be the most fortunate demon, because she was not only liberated, but she took the form of a mother in Goloka Vrindavan. Just by acting as Krishna's mother for a few seconds and having that sentiment, she actually had the sentiment. For a few seconds, she thought, this child is beautiful. Let me be his mother. Then she, demoniac mentality, I'm going to kill him. But just for having that thought for a few seconds and seeing Krishna with his beautiful smiling face. And another case was Aghasura. Aghasura was promoted to Vaikuntha. And why was that? Because when he left his body, when Krishna expanded himself, and he left his body, he lingered there for a few seconds, and Krishna came out of his mouth and he saw him. And by seeing him and right there, when he was already liberated from that demoniac body, instead of being promoted to Brahman, he was promoted to Vaikuntha. He didn't make it to Goloka because he didn't have any intimate dealing. He just by vision. He made it to Vaikuntha. And then most of the other demons, they were promoted to the Brahman liberated stage. But everyone gets benefited. And Krishna's playing. Krishna's always playing. No. Otherwise, if it weren't like that, then all of his Vaikuntha forms where he carries weapons would have to be considered only in relation to matter, something material. Otherwise, it wouldn't. If there's no lila there, if there's no happiness and pleasure, and therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains very deftly, of course, all of our acharyas, but Srila Prabhupada is giving us the conclusion that when Krishna wants to fight, which is one of his lilas, then he finds a devotee who can fight with him. No, and we saw so many, Jambavan. No, even they weren't like extracted out of Vaikuntha, like Jayam Bijay, to come and fight with him. They were already his devotees, but he fought with them. Because, with all the soldiers on the battlefield of the Kurukshetra who were promoted to a spiritual platform because they were, they saw Krishna, he didn't even fight with them. They weren't even worthy of his fighting attention. No, he just drove a chariot. And the only one he fought with, who did he fight with? Bhishma Dev, his pure devotee. That's the only one he fought with in the Battle of Kurukshetra. So this verse means that Krishna enjoys these wonderful pastimes. Every incarnation, always, it's always Krishna's pleasure. And therefore, devotees only want to give Krishna pleasure. They don't try to analyze Krishna by some, material calculation. But they want to please Krishna. Now, the other part of this verse, which is very important, is that he is the overseeing witness with the gopis and their husbands. So if he is, then the argument is, which is given in the purport here, but it's expanded a little more by our acharyas, is if he's already living within the hearts of the gopis, what is the problem with embracing them? In other words, he's living more intimately. How can you get more intimate than living in someone's heart? No. And in this Paramatma feature, which is it's said in some scriptures, in the Bhagavatam it says, it has the size of a thumb, no? That's Paramatma has it, just to give some indication. But in many of the Upanishads, it says that Paramatma has no form, no? We see Paramatma with little atom trails going around, electron trails going around him, no? But actually, many Shrutis even say that he has no form. And if he does, it's the size of a thumb, no? So, therefore, how will Krishna fully enjoy his pastimes with the gopis in a thumb form. No. How could he possibly enjoy it? Being in a thumb form within their hearts. So to fulfill his desire to be with his devotees, then he takes his form. And also, because it mentions here he's in the heart of the husbands, how can he not favor the husbands? Otherwise, who are these husbands? They're his eternal associates also. It's not like the husbands are somebody from New York City, or, you know, they're his eternal associates. So they also have to be favored by Krishna. Therefore, how could Krishna do anything which would be unfavorable to the husbands? So in verse 36, then he gives the main reason. The main reason, when the Lord assumes a human-like body to show mercy to his devotees, he engages in such pastimes as will attract those who hear about him to become dedicated to him. So here are two levels of Krishna's pastimes. One is, he assumed a human-like form to give pleasure to the gopis. This is this form, which is his original form, which Srila Prabhupada explains even from the Bhagavad Gita, the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This is his original form. This is the most relishable form. Srila Prabhupada explains in one purport in Bhagavad Gita that when one has actually become attracted to this two-armed form, even other forms, which are totally transcendental, are not as attractive. No. Of course, every form is purely spiritual and we worship it as Krishna. But a devotee who's actually entered into the attraction of Krishna in his two-armed form, he worships those forms, but the attraction is not the same. No. The attraction is not the same for other forms, four-arm forms, eight-arm forms, thousand-arm forms. We relish them. Lord Chaitanya showed us that when he was in Jagannath Puri, for 2 months he spoke about the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj with his associates, just to show that it's not that because I'm now absorbed in the holy name that I'm only thinking about the gopis in Vrindavan. For 2 months he discussed Dhruva Maharaj. No. And just to show that, every pastime of the Lord, even when he takes the form of Vishnu, just to come and give a blessing to a devotee who had a material desire, is very relishable. What to speak of these other pastimes? No. So, in verse number 36, I'm sorry. He wants to give pleasure to these gopis, the most intimate devotees. And also, it says in the second part of the verse, he wants to attract those. Otherwise, people, manusha deham ashritaha. No. That means that people who are accepting, that Krishna has accepted a human-like body, but it also means people who think they are in a human body. No. This explanation was given by Jiva Goswami. People who think they have a human-like body, the people who think they're these bodies, but who somehow or another have become attracted to Krishna, then they will get the opportunity of having the maximum attraction to Krishna by him taking this particular form. Uddhava, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, he spoke a very beautiful verse to Maitreya about the human-like form of Krishna. Yan martililao paikam svayogamaya balam darshayata grihitam. That this most unprecedented human-like form, meaning that Krishna's beauty in this form excels his beauty in any other form, in any other situation. Unprecedented. Because not only is the form human-like, but the activities are so human-like that they bewilder practically everyone, which is why Shukadeva Goswami is having to give this large explanation, because how many people do we see that say that, you know, Krishna was immoral? Of course, they say it because they want to be immoral also. No. They don't say that because they're very moral. There may be a few people, but most of them, they want to be immoral. Therefore, they are sahajiyas. They want to enjoy like Krishna, and they justify it. But there are people, the Uddhava says, this. Why is it so special? Because Swayoga Maya Balam, because Yoga Maya can make her maximum manifestation, her most complete manifestation, by totally covering Yashoda Mai, Nanda Maharaj, the friends of Krishna, the gopis, the servants of Krishna. Everyone is totally enamored by the form of Krishna to the point where they don't realize he's Krishna. No. The servants of Krishna don't even realize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead most of the time. They do more than everybody else. And of course, those who are situated in a neutral relationship, the trees, the cows, different objects of Vrindavan, they appreciate Krishna as something supreme, but they still don't see him as the Supreme Personality of God. Sometimes they do, but then they forget about it. You know? Like Mother Yashoda, as soon as she began to think philosophically, you know, Krishna doesn't entertain philosophical thought in his Vrindavan Leela. And whenever philosophical thought comes about, just like when Krishna was in Kurukshetra with the gopis, whenever there was some, he started speaking philosophically, the gopis rejected it. Radharani rejected it. Krishna, why are you trying to speak to us that we should become yogis? No. Yogis are trying to meditate on the Lord, on Paramatma, and trying to remember him. And the gopis are trying to forget him. No. We're all trying to forget him. We're trying to forget you. Because you're so abusive, but we can't forget you. So what's the use of being a yogi? No. Yogis are trying to remember you. They have to meditate. Even when we try to forget you, we meditate. So what's the use of being a yogi? Useless. No. So then he says, Vismapanam swasya cha sobhagaridhe paramparam bhushanabhushanangam. That who can understand the beauty of Krishna and this form, when his own incarnations and expansions are enamored by that beauty, you know, Mahavishnu, Balaram, all of his expansions and incarnations are totally infatuated with Krishna's transcendental form, and even those who are proud of their sobhagaride, who have great opulence, they also become conquered by this form. Even the demigods become conquered by this form. No. Because this form is so beautiful that the ornaments of the body are decorated by the beauty of Krishna. Not the Krishna, his ornaments don't beautify him. He beautifies his ornaments. No. This is the special quality of Krishna. So now, this is why such a special form. And now, considering this particular verse, it begins, Nasuyam. They are not envious. Why? Well, it says in the last word, Braja o okasa. Because they are eternal associates of Krishna. They are residents of Braja. Every resident of Braja is attracted to Krishna. They cannot be envious. Therefore, here, Shukadeva Goswami is showing that this was the essence of Parikshit Maharaj's original question. No. He said in text number 27, Paradharha Bhimarshanam. How then could they have violated them? How could he have violated them by touching other men's wives? No. That was his main point. So here Shukadeva Goswami is dealing with that particular point. This is the end of his argument. Then it goes on to other considerations. So this argument, he says, several considerations we have here. First of all, that the cowherd men were bewildered by the illusory potency. But here the word mayaya, the spiritual potency of illusion. Our acharyas explain this was not mahamaya. No. If it were mahamaya, then they would have become envious. But this was yogamaya. No. By yogamaya's potency. Now you can imagine in Vedic society, if someone's wife gets up and goes away at, 12 o'clock at night, even here in Dallas, they would be very upset. What to speak of in the most perfect manifestation of Vedic society when Krishna is present, that you can imagine how they would feel. Their wives are getting up. So Jiva Goswami explains that actually when Krishna played his flute, only the gopis could hear it. And this particular occasion, when he played his flute at night, when he played his flute in the daytime, everybody could hear it. But if he would have allowed the cowherd men, the husbands, if he would have allowed them to hear, then they would have known that they're going, here's Krishna's flute, we're all attracted to Krishna's flute, my wife is leaving, my daughter is leaving, this is Krishna. What's Krishna doing up at midnight? No. What's Krishna running around playing his flute at midnight? Therefore, only the gopis could hear it. No. This is a very important point. So therefore, they weren't aware of why their wives were getting up. Now, the other very important point here is what is quoted here from Ujjwala Nilamani, and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur brings out this point. That the wives that were detained, there were a few actual gopis who were detained. No, they were actually detained and they meditated on the Rasa Lila. But in most cases, all the gopis who joined Krishna directly, they were not the gopis. They were manifestations of doubles, exact clones. No, actually cloning. We think cloning is something new. But here we see that Krishna was cloning 5,000 years ago. No, that the yoga maya potency, she cloned all the gopis. Cloned them so perfectly that even their husbands couldn't tell the difference. No, she cloned them so perfectly, yoga maya. So they stayed behind. But they did, but what did the husbands see? They saw these cloned versions get up and try to go out, and they detained them. And they put all the blame on the wives. No. They were thinking, some of them were thinking that yes, Krishna is going, they want to go see Krishna. They didn't know why. They were thinking, our wives are trying to disturb Krishna. No. They were thinking like that. They weren't thinking Krishna's secretly calling them, and because otherwise how could we use the word here? Shukadeva Goswami used the word nasuyan. There was absolutely no envy. Because they were these gopis, they were never married to these people. They never had any contact with them. Not only that, but Jiva Goswami says, even with the Maya forms. The yoga maya forms, which were created during this pastime. And not only during this pastime, but they were created every night. Because the gopis went out every night. Sometimes it was on full moon nights, it was Rasa Lila. But on other nights, it was just, go out and meet Krishna. No. And they did that in the daytime, too. At night and in the daytime, Krishna would sneak off all the time when he was with his cowherd boys. That's why the gopis are so, they're so fortunate. The cowherd boys, they didn't get to associate with Krishna at night. But the gopis got to associate with Krishna day and night. No, they were very fortunate. Yashoda Mai, of course, couldn't associate with Krishna at night because she was sleeping. No. And so the point is, even these yoga maya forms were never touched by their husbands because they were pure manifestations of yoga maya. So there was never any intimate contact. There was no sexual activity with these, with the wife, either the original, what to speak of the originals, not even the copies. You know, they slept in separate beds or separate bedrooms. That because everyone was so satisfied with being with Krishna, that what's the need of, you know, having some intimate contact of husband and wife would be a downgrade. No, that would be, I mean, what's the use of that? If you're there with Krishna, hearing Krishna play his flute, seeing Krishna's transcendental form, relishing Krishna's pastimes, then what is the need for some intimate contact? There's no intimate contact. No need for that. No. Now, of course, we can go back and consider that actually these gopis were Krishna's wives. They, from the very soon as they saw Krishna, even though they were very young, as soon as they saw Krishna, what were they doing? They were meditating. They were praying to Katyayani that please allow Krishna to become our husband. So what did Krishna do? Anyone remember? How did Krishna satisfy their desire? No, before that. Before that, he stole all of their garments and he climbed in a tree. And then what did they have to do? They had to come out of the water without clothes. When they came out of the water without clothes, they were married to Krishna. Because by Vedic rites, if a man sees a woman without clothing, he's married. That, of course, nowadays, so many men would be married to movie stars, no? Because they're showing these things on them. All kinds of ways. No, there's all kinds of marriages going on nowadays through the movies. No, of course, many of those men would love to be married to those ladies, most likely. No, but that's another subject. So that was the first time. And as Nityananda Prabhu was mentioning, when Brahma stole the cows and the cowherd boys, that he manifested himself in those forms. And all of the, and that's when, that was the year when all of Krishna's friends got married to different gopis. So they actually, they were never even married. The actual gopis were never married to the, they were married to Krishna. No, because Krishna, that was Krishna's expansion. Then when Krishna contained all those expansions within himself and the original cowherd boys, that they thought that they were married. They thought that they had become married. But they were actually only thinking in terms of these yogamaya forms. No. And so this is how, otherwise, by this particular verse, we have an example from Lord Chaitanya's pastime in South India of how this happens. Because when Lord Chaitanya was traveling in South India, he met one Brahmin, and the Brahmin was enamored by his beauty, Lord Chaitanya's beauty. He invited him for lunch. So Lord Chaitanya went to have lunch, and he got there, and there was no lunch. You know? And the Brahmin was sitting on sitting down with his head down, lamenting, crying. And so Lord Chaitanya came to him and said, "What happened to lunch? No, you invited me for lunch, there's no lunch." And he said, "How can I cook? No. When Mother Sita has been stolen away, how can I possibly cook? How can I do anything?" No, because he was meditating so deeply on Lord Ram's pastime. He was a devotee of Lord Ramchandra, that he thought, how can I cook? Yes, I wanted to cook for you when I saw you, but how can I do that if Sita has been stolen away? So Lord Chaitanya explained to him that actually Sita was never really stolen away, but actually that Sita was, it can never be touched by any materialistic person. Then Lord Chaitanya went further to South India and he found a copy of the Kurma Purana. And on his way back, he stopped again with his Brahmin. And he explained to him, he said, here in the Kurma Purana, it explains that actually Sita Devi, when she was confronted by the idea of being alone without Lord Ramachandra, that she prayed to Agni, please protect me. You are the supreme protector. You are the giver of death. You are the giver of life. You are the giver of everything. Please protect me. No. When Lakshman had actually left and she was alone. And Agni appeared before her and said, yes, until your Ramachandra appears again to take you, I will give you shelter. And he and she left behind Amaya Sita. Same thing, a duplicate. So that when Ravana came, Ravana never even saw Sita. He never saw her. He just saw the duplicate. So Lord Chaitanya was explaining this. And then, so when the whole pastime, Ravana is killed, Sita comes back. Sita is brought back by Hanuman. And she is, so there's some question in some people's minds. How could Ramachandra accept Sita back when she'd been touched by another man? This is how strict Vedic society was. Nowadays, everybody just embraces and, doesn't matter, everything's okay. But in those days, another man could never touch someone's wife, couldn't even touch them. So the arrangement was made that Sita would go into the fire and be tested. So the Maya form entered into the fire where Sita had been staying all this time, and she came out. Agni delivered her to Lord Ram. So when the Brahmin heard that, he was very ecstatic. And he cooked for Lord Chaitanya for some time after that. First time he cooked for him, but he wasn't... He understood it, but he didn't understand it completely. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya came back to fulfill his understanding. So this is another way we can understand it. It's not just here, but it had happened before. Cloning had been there since Treta Yuga. So when the material scientists say that, what do you think about our cloning? Well, you're behind the times. Just like Srila Prabhupada said about the scientists. He always used the example about the egg. He said, why don't they take some yellow chemical and some white chemical and make an egg? And then one devotee asked, well, what if they do that, Srila Prabhupada? And Srila Prabhupada said, well, he was quoting, Bahamsa Dutta gave this argument, and Prabhupada was quoting it. He said that then they should give the Nobel Prize to the chicken, because the chicken did it first. Because even if they do it, then they're way behind the chicken, millions of years behind the chickens. They did it first. So... this is the brilliance of Srila Prabhupada, and this is the brilliance of the Vedic science. So we can understand from this particular, as it says here, all these marriages, of course, Jiva Goswami in his Gopal Champu, at the end, it says that actually Radharani approached Krishna, because at one point they did get married, or they were officially married. One sense. But they did get married. But then they thought it was very boring. This Swakiya Rasa is very boring. So let's go back to the Parakiya Rasa. It's much more adventurous. It's very, very boring just being husband and wife. Of course, we shouldn't think that way. Yeah. That's for Krishna. And unfortunately, some of our devotees and even whole society and even some of our devotees have gone to think that way. This is very boring. Let me have some adventure. Let me have some parakiya. So, in conclusion, that this parakiya rasa, we can really understand it from this verse. We can understand that there's nothing illicit going on. That Krishna never allowed his gopis to be touched in any way by any of these. Even though they're his eternal associates, even though they are his most intimate devotees, they never touched the gopis. And gopis were always Krishna's. And they were always married to Krishna. But Krishna created this whole situation to enjoy parakiya rasa, to intensify his loving exchanges between the gopis and himself. And the parakiya rasa is the conduit, the mechanism by which Krishna can enjoy in the most intimate way. Because how does he enjoy? First of all, he meets with, he calls the gopis, then he condemns them. No. If it weren't parakiya, he couldn't have had that rasa of, what are you doing here in the forest this time of night? No. This is not good. You will give up all social conventions. Now, when Krishna said, you will give up all social conventions, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that actually Krishna is instructing us that we should give up social conventions to take up bhakti, because bhakti is the ultimate supreme religious principle. And because it is the supreme religious principle, then it is beyond all other principles. Of course, we can't jump to that plan. We can't jump to spontaneous devotional service. But ultimately, Krishna was glorifying spontaneous devotional service as being beyond all rules and regulations. Of course, you have to be qualified. Not that you just declare yourself qualified. Or as some people do, they think, oh, this Raganuga Bhakti is much better. No, I don't have to follow all the rules and regulations. But they're not following the wrong rules and regulations. The rules and regulations you don't follow is you don't go to Mangalarti. Why? Because you were up all night chanting the Maha Mantra. No. The other rules, there's so many rules and regulations that you have to bathe at this time, you have to do this at this time. But a devotee who is situated in Raganuga Bhakti, because they're meditating so intensely on Krishna, they may or may not do something at this time or that time. That's the rules and regulations. Not that I don't follow the four regulated principles. I don't follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions because I'm in Raganuga Bhakti. One devotee in Vrindavan, just last year, last October, came to me and said, well, I think I'm ready for Raganuga Bhakti, you know. And he and his wife had just told me that, you know, just maybe a year before that, oh yeah, we went to such and such a restaurant, we ate, you know, and went to another restaurant. These weren't devotee restaurants. And so then a year later, he was ready for Raganuga Bhakti. I said, I think you probably better wait a little while longer. You know? At least give up the restaurant going, you know. Then we can talk about Raganuga Bhakti. Yeah. At least give that up first. And a few other things, maybe. So we can't take Raganuga Bhakti cheaply. But Krishna could enjoy these things and was at the same time instructing us. Then he begins to dance with the gopis. Then he shows us that we should never be proud, even of Krishna, even of having Krishna. We should not be proud of having Krishna, meaning I want to enjoy Krishna. That's what that means. Being proud of Krishna means Krishna's my property, I'm going to enjoy him. No, I'm Krishna's property. I am for his enjoyment. So he wanted to show that. At the same time, he was drawn out of the rasa dance by Srimati Radharani, showing her supreme position. No. And then he showed that, but I'm also independent of her. Although he's really not, but he showed that. No, that ultimately, I am the Supreme Lord. Then he reunited with them. And then he had wonderful pastimes in the Yamuna and then wonderful pastimes in the forest. So all of those things would not be possible in Swakiya Rasa. No, they would never be possible. So therefore, Parikiya Rasa is the maximum manifestation. And what Srila Prabhupada says many times, that what is highest in the spiritual world is lowest in the material world. So there are many examples of that, like envy. Here it speaks of envy. Envy is the highest. This transcendental envy that the gopi, especially among the gopis, they manifest. That one gopi is serving Krishna in a very wonderful way, and another gopi becomes envious. But not of the gopi, but of the service. I have to serve Krishna better. No. Otherwise, she's doing such, I have to do that service better so that Krishna will be more pleased. It has nothing to do with her. It has nothing to do with the other gopi. It has everything to do with Krishna. But this transcendental envy, Narottam Das Thakur says, don't try to imitate it. No. You can, the other five manifestations of the mind, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada. These five things, you can, somehow or another, you can dovetail them in Krishna's service. But matsarya, envy, don't try to do that. Unless you're on the platform of the gopis or the eternal residence of Vrindavan. Don't try to do that. Just get rid of envy. That's Narottam Das Thakur's instruction. Anyway, there's many other things that we could say, but I'll stop here. Any comments or any questions?
Yeah. Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's nice to see you and your disciples here
in
Dallas.
Nice to see you.
Thank you for your time this morning. And you may have touched on it already there at the end, but this subject of not to imitate, maybe I hope I'm not taking it out of context, but if we're not to imitate saintly persons or these role mm-hmm. models or whomever, are we not at risk of imitating animals and demons, etc.? Can we find a balance?
Yeah, better we don't imitate anyone. Srila Prabhupada said there's two things, no? That karanam and saranam, or sharanam. He said, one place he says sharanam, another place he says saranam. But it's really saranam. Also sharanam. Karanam means you do, externally you do the same. And sharanam, or saranam, means that, no, you take shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, you just like we spoke in the beginning, you try to understand all of Krishna's instructions and all of Krishna's pastimes. You take everything into context. You don't try to imitate. And if we take it in terms of saranam, and you capture the essence of Krishna's instructions. You want to understand the deep meaning that Krishna wants to convey to us. And that's why we have purports. Otherwise, if we didn't have purports, we would just understand it according to our own mind. And even sometimes with the purports, we understand it according to our mind. Therefore, we need guru, sadhu. We need devotees, association of Vaishnavas, instructions of guru to be able to understand properly. Because even if we read and even if we associate, sometimes we don't understand and someone has to chastise us and someone has to keep us in line. So if we don't maintain a very submissive mood of capturing the instructions and capturing the essence and always digging for that essence, and always trying to find the deepest meaning, then we'll get caught up in superficial understanding, superficial meanings, will become imitative, both philosophically and in our activities. And then we have what we have, unfortunately, many times today, misunderstandings, misconceptions, fanaticism, polarization, going to one extreme or another extreme, where Krishna himself said that you don't want to be in one extreme or another. You don't eat too much, you don't eat too little. You don't sleep too much, you don't sleep too little. Everything should be moderated. We should find the essence so we don't have this pendulum effect of going back and forth, bhogatyaga, trying to enjoy and then renouncing, trying to enjoy then renouncing. Hare Krishna. Yes, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So by transcendental circumstance, it seems that the husbands were not envious of Krishna with this situation. But we're in this circumstance of Kali Yuga, and it seems that it's so easy to develop envy in the heart for it seems like, at least I'll speak for myself, any situation, I feel like,
Anyway?
Any situation, here mm-hmm. in Kali Yuga, it seems it's so easy to become envious of something or of someone, even if it's unknowingly, still you in the long-term effect, you can see that there was envy in the heart. So how does one control that? How does one remove envy from the heart?
Well, of course, the key, I mean, the whole Bhagavatam is about that. No, because the Bhagavatam begins by saying, Nirmatsaranam Satam, Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam, that this Bhagavatam is meant for non-envious people. So obviously, if we enter into the Bhagavatam in the proper mood and we really understand it, we will give up our envy. So Lord Chaitanya condensed that in his Shikshastikam. Trinadapi sunichena torori vasa hishtuna. Amani namani dinakyutani asada hari. If we just follow that very simple instruction, which Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami said is the garland that devotees should wear always around their necks. If you have that garland on, not just this flower garland, which is also very purifying because it comes from Krishna, but if you wear that garland, then you will become free from envy. No. And then, if you wear that garland, then you can follow the next instruction, nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va, that you can give up attachment to wealth, followers, opposite sex, and objects of sense gratification. So that's the condensed version, and the expanded version is here in the 12 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's why we have to go very carefully. That's why Srila Prabhupada established this system of Bhagavatam, where we go verse by verse, we analyze, we're trying to, you know, we shouldn't attend the Bhagavatam class or hear the Bhagavatam, even if we're just reading the Bhagavatam superficially, which should be very deep, because as you say correctly, the envy is very deep in the heart. And therefore you have to take the Bhagavatam, the instrument, you know, go as deep as the envy as you have to go in. So by serving the Vaishnavas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave another formula, which Rupa Goswami includes in the practices of devotional service as the five most important, which is associating with Vaishnavas, chanting the holy name, hearing the Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity in Tulsi Devi, and living in a holy place. So if we do those five things, we follow the Shikshastika, we hear the Bhagavatam, then we can extract the envy from our hearts. But it's a very difficult process, and that's why Srila Prabhupada said, don't be surprised by who stays in Krishna consciousness, but by who leaves Krishna consciousness, but be surprised by those who stay. No. Otherwise, those who can stay in Krishna consciousness and really understand it the same way that Srila Prabhupada understood it, the same way that our acharyas have understood it, no, the same way that the pure devotees understand it, they're free from envy. Even though sometimes they may become angry at their disciples or at some person for violating principles or for going against some injunction, that anger is out of love. There's no envy there. And this is one of the verses that we just went over. That was the whole point, that there's no envy. There's no possible envy. Krishna loves everyone. Krishna's in their hearts. How can he treat anyone, the husbands, the gopis, or anyone, in such a way which would be in any way detrimental or bring envy or anger or any frustration? It is said that these cowherd men were angry, but they were angry at their wives. They thought, what are they doing? No, they became a little angry. No. So any other question or comment? Yes.
My question is just about like imitating devotees or not imitating but associating with them. And I was just, when I was 20, I lived with nuns in a convent, and they had, you know, everything was real regulated. Mm-hmm. And but they always had like an hour or two every day for everyone to just go sit in your room all by yourself and pray and read and spend time alone. and do alone things. And that was considered to be part of, not by itself, but part of a system of strengthening spiritual life. But often I hear that we shouldn't be alone. We should always be in the association of devotees, because you're alone and then your mind and then... And so I was wondering, is there a balance, or is it bad to be alone, or is it actually can be helpful to spiritual life to spend time by yourself reading and praying and doing those things? Or
I think being alone, when we refer to being alone being dangerous, it means being alone without the holy name, without the Bhagavata. Obviously, Srila Prabhupada said that every devotee should study for at least an hour or 2 hours a day. So you may be alone, physically you may be alone, but you're associating with the Bhagavatam. You're associating with Srila Prabhupada. No. So you're not really alone in that sense. Being alone means like you're just out there with your mind. And of course you're not alone, you're with your mind, but that's a very dangerous association. No. So, yes, but too much time alone with the holy name or even alone with the Bhagavatam can also be dangerous. Because then, as Srila Prabhupada said again and again and again, don't try to imitate Haridas Thakur and chant alone too much or be alone too much. And how can you really understand the Bhagavatam if you don't hear it in the association of others? No. Otherwise, we read and study the Bhagavatam, and then we should bring our questions forward in the association of Vaishnavas. I mean, I gave the example the other day, even the personal associates of Lord Chaitanya could not understand certain things. Like when the Bengali poet came to show his wonderful poem to Lord Chaitanya, Swarup Damodar wouldn't let him. But Bhagavan Acharya was saying, "Oh, this is wonderful. You have to show it to Lord Chaitanya." And so finally, Swarup Damodar sat down and listened to it. And all the devotees were thinking, "This is wonderful." And Swarup Damodar defeated it. And he said, "You're going to hell. For your conclusions here, you're going to hell." You know? So that even when you're a personal associate, sometimes it's difficult to understand things. Of course, this is Leela. But the Leela is there to show us that we should not depend too much on our personal understanding. Of course, also, we shouldn't deprive ourselves of our own realizations. But those realizations should be supported by Guru Shastra and Sadhu, not just some flamboyance of the mind, you know, that my mind just takes off and I'm enamored by my degree of intelligence or analytical ability or understanding, you know. So both things have to be there. Of course, Srila Prabhupada wanted devotees to have realizations. He said devotees should write. Even if you're not a writer, you can just read something and then write down your understanding. No. So write down your realizations and then compare that with other Vaishnavas. Sit down and discuss. This is how we deepen our... You know, there's one verse, I can't remember it now, in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where it says that one should strengthen the mind by argument. No, we should not arguing like, you know, scissors and you know, paper, scissors and rock, you know. Not that kind of, you know, hard-headed argument, but by philosophical and spiritual discussion, we should sharpen our realizations. Not that we just, you know, we just blindly accept everything, but we should have, every devotee should have realizations. No, because we're unique, everyone's an individual. So our realizations by our individual capacity will be unique, and Krishna will appreciate that. And that's how we develop our rasa.